Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Unsolicited Text Message Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On October 14, 2015, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Campbell Ewald Company v. Gomez. This case concerns a complaint by Jose Gomez that Campbell Ewald Company, a marketing consultant for the U.S. Navy, allowed a third-party vendor to send him unsolicited text messages in violation of the Telephone Consumer Protection Act. Three questions are before the court. The first is whether a case becomes moot when a plaintiff receives an offer of complete relief on his claim, and the second is whether the answer to that changes if the plaintiff is attempting to bring a class action. The third question is whether the doctrine of derivative sovereign immunity for government contractors is limited to claims arising out of property damage caused by public works projects. To discuss the case, we have Mark Chenoweth, who is general counsel at Washington Legal Foundation. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Chenoweth.
Before we jump into the facts of the case, I should note that there is a derivative sovereign immunity issue in the case that I'm not going to discuss further, both for the sake of time and because it's not the issue that has garnered the interest and attention of outside organizations like Washington Legal Foundation. That said, let's begin. Respondent Jose Gomez contends that he suffered an injury when petitioner Campbell Ewald, a company, in 2006 arranged for a third-party vendor to send him one or more unsolicited text messages urging him to join the Navy. Gomez contends that Campbell Ewald's actions violated a provision of the Telephone Consumer Protection Act, which prohibits use of an automatic telephone dialing system to call a cell phone. The TCPA provides for enforcement by the FCC, state attorneys general, and it creates a private right of action. Individuals injured by violations of the TCPA may seek to enjoin the violations and to recover the greater of actual damages, or $500 per violation, or up to $1,500 if the court determines the defendant willfully or knowingly violated the statute. In addition to seeking an award of damages for himself, Gomez sought to represent a class consisting of thousands of other individuals who allegedly received Navy recruitment text messages at the behest of Campbell Ewald. The complaint also sought an injunction requiring Campbell Ewald to cease all wireless spam activities and an award of reasonable attorney's fees and costs. However, before Gomez even filed a motion for class certification, Campbell Ewald sought to end the lawsuit by giving Gomez all the relief he requested. It offered to pay him $1,503 for the one Navy recruitment text message he claimed to have received, and an additional $1,503 for any other similar text message he might in good faith claim to have received. The larger amount presumably in recognition of the fact that the complaint alleged that Campbell Ewald acted willfully and knowingly, and Campbell Ewald had to accede to treble damages to remove all adverseness from the case. Campbell Ewald also offered to pay all reasonable costs and to stipulate to an injunction prohibiting the company from engaging in the alleged wrongs. Campbell Ewald's offer took two forms. First, the company filed a notice of offer of judgment with the district court pursuant to Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 68. Second, the company directed a separate settlement offer to counsel for Gomez. Gomez refused to accept the proffered cash, and so then Campbell Ewald moved to dismiss the complaint, arguing that its offer of complete relief meant that the lawsuit no longer presented a case or controversy under Article 3 of the U.S. Constitution, and thus that the district court lacked jurisdiction to issue a ruling on the merits. The district court recognized that Campbell Ewald had offered complete relief to Gomez. Nonetheless, it denied the motion and granted Gomez's motion to strike the Rule 68 offer. On appeal, the Ninth Circuit considered and rejected Campbell Ewald's contention that its offer of complete relief to Gomez rendered his claims moot and deprived the federal courts of jurisdiction to address the merits of his claims. Although the appeals court did not contest that Campbell Ewald offered to provide Gomez all the relief to which he was entitled, the court held that the Rule 68 offer did not moot his individual claims because Gomez had rejected that offer and, quote, an unaccepted Rule 68 offer that would fully satisfy a plaintiff's claim is insufficient to render the claim moot, unquote. The Ninth Circuit felt compelled to issue this ruling because of a previous precedent in the Ninth Circuit called Diaz v. First American Home Buyers. The court, however, did not separately discuss the other settlement offer. The Ninth Circuit panel also held that Gomez's putative class claims were not moot. The court recognized that the U.S. Supreme Court recently held in 2013 in Genesis Healthcare that when a plaintiff's individual claims become moot and no other plaintiffs have been added to the lawsuit, Article 3's case or controversy requirement requires dismissal of the suit, notwithstanding a plaintiff's claim right to represent similarly situated individuals who might also wish to raise wage and hour claims under the Fair Labor Standards Act. The appeals court nonetheless concluded that because Genesis was not clearly irreconcilable with Diaz, that the panel remained bound by circuit precedent and Campbell Ewald's mootness arguments had to be rejected. So that's where the case stood when it came before the Supreme Court. So let me talk now about what outcomes each party is seeking. Campbell Ewald is seeking the Supreme Court to declare that the case should be dismissed as moot or that the case should be disposed of by entering judgment for the plaintiff on the terms of the offer of settlement. That is, not on the merits, but just on the terms of the offer of settlement. Campbell Ewald contends that a court maintains jurisdiction even over a moot case in order to enter that kind of a judgment, just as it would if a settlement had been reached. In a recent Sixth Circuit case called O'Brien v. Ed Donnelly Enterprises, this procedure was used to ensure that despite mootness, a plaintiff was not left without anything while still preventing the court from reaching the merits when it lacks Article III jurisdiction. And that's the path that Campbell Ewald suggests that the Supreme Court can take alternatively here if it doesn't wish to just dismiss the case as moot. Gomez, on the other hand, is seeking the outcome that the Supreme Court will declare the case not moot and permit the Ninth Circuit's order to stand. The effect of this outcome would be to send the case back to the district court, allowing a merits consideration of the class certification request, notwithstanding the fact that Gomez himself has already been offered full statutory damages. This outcome would mean both that plaintiffs can force courts to consider the merits of cases simply by refusing settlement and that a plaintiff has a substantive right to pursue class action litigation and serve as a class representative. Note that even if the court sides with Gomez in this way, several justices raised the question of whether Gomez could ever be considered an adequate class representative when he's turned down the requested relief in the case, something that most class members presumably would not do. Chief Justice Roberts, for example, asked whether Gomez would be an adequate class representative under these facts. The core arguments that Campbell Ewald is making in this case revolve around the fact that Article III of the U.S. Constitution requires a case or controversy in order for federal courts to have jurisdiction to hear a case. And so Campbell Ewald contends that Gomez's individual claim was mooted by the offer of complete relief, and that once a judge determines, and Campbell Ewald concedes that the judge needs to make that determination, but that once the judge determines that the offer actually is for complete relief, that the case must end. That no Article III case exists because there's no adverseness and therefore no jurisdiction to hear a case on the merits. It thirdly contends that the settlement offer here was a complete offer of relief that ended the controversy. Fourth, it contends that refusing to accept a settlement does not keep a controversy alive, that the injury then becomes traceable to the refusal to settle and not to the original alleged harm. And finally, Campbell Ewald contends that putative class claims have to be moot in the absence of a certified class when the class representative's individual claim has already been mooted. The core arguments that Jose Gomez makes in response are first that when you're talking about a past injury, as we are in this case, that injury provides jurisdiction as long as it is traceable to the defendant and the requested judicial relief would redress the injury. Second, Gomez says that the offer of so-called complete relief did not include the requested attorney's fees and that it doesn't matter that the statute doesn't provide for attorney's fees, that the dispute over attorney's fees still provides adverseness. Next, Gomez contends that the offer of complete relief did not include class certification, which would provide an incentive fee to Gomez as well as help to reduce his attorney's fees by allowing them to be split with other plaintiffs. Fourth, Gomez says that even if the offer of complete relief was really complete, it can't moot the case. At most, it might justify a forced entry of judgment. And that may, in fact, be where this case is going. A forced entry of judgment was something that both sides intimated was a potential middle ground here. Fifth, Gomez said that the plaintiff has a right to an enforceable court judgment, though Justice Alito points out that receiving the actual money should be superior to a judgment. And Chief Justice Roberts questioned whether there truly is a right to impose on the court's time for a judgment when there's no longer a controversy to be resolved. Finally, Gomez said if the case is moot, then the court can't enter a judgment at that point because it lacks subject matter jurisdiction. Apparently, Gomez thinks even to enter a forced judgment on the terms of the complete relief offered would be something that the court wouldn't have jurisdiction to do, but I don't think the court is going to agree with him in that point. A couple of noteworthy items from the oral argument. First, the Solicitor General split time with Gomez's counsel to argue that an unaccepted offer cannot moot a case. Second, when Gomez's counsel finally got around to mentioning that the complete relief offer did not include class certification or class relief, Chief Justice Roberts noted, oh, well, that's the whole thing, right? This is all about class certification. And of course it is, although the arguments danced around that quite a bit. Third, Justice Breyer mentioned the AFL-CIO brief, which was filed on Gomez's side, and asked whether Gomez agreed with it, and his counsel said no, interestingly enough. That brief suggests that an offer of settlement isn't enough to moot a case like this, but that actually tendering the money to the court would have been enough. And Justice Breyer said he was looking to be practical. He seemed to be looking for a way to allow defendants to still end cases, but that they'd actually have to submit the money to the court and not just make an offer of settlement. So how is this case likely to turn out? Well, it's hard to say. There didn't appear to be a five-justice consensus for either of the two main positions advanced by the parties in the case. One set of justices, including the chief, seems keen to address the policy issues implicit in whether or not class certification should be allowed here. Another set of justices, led by Justice Kagan, seems perfectly happy to ignore that question and focus only on the technical mootness question. And then Justice Breyer seemed intent to find a practical end. One such practical end would be the alternative that Campbell-Ewald put forward of having a mootness finding, but also then having entry of judgment, sort of a forced entry of judgment, on the terms offered for complete relief. And although Gomez's counsel did not indicate that it would go along with that, it didn't argue very strenuously against that particular outcome, and I believe that that might be where the case is headed. The last point I'll make is that oral argument didn't address this, but I think it's a fair question whether the requested judicial relief would likely redress the injury. When the plaintiff turns down an offer of settlement for complete relief, it calls into question whether the relief sought was really likely to redress the injury after all. I don't know if the court will mention that, but if it does send the case back to the lower court for class certification review, I think that kind of issue would come up as the courts consider whether or not Mr. Gomez can be an adequate class representative.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.